After leaving Crandall's place, Yakima walked through the wind and the blowing snow. It was nearly good dark, but the snow offered enough light that he could see up and down the street for about 50 yards. Here and there, he could see a few lamplit windows as well. Soon, he'd head over to the Wild Coyote, but first, he'd walk around a little more. The footsteps of the deputy's killer, or what he'd taken for the killer's sign, had led toward the Cannon House. If the man hadn't gone inside, maybe he'd gone on around the place and was holing up somewhere behind it. This time of year, there were plenty of empty cabins in Dead River. Pulling his collar high, he walked out back of the hotel and into the shrubs and rocks behind it. He was looking for more tracks in the snow, or lamplight that might indicate an occupied cabin. A few minutes later, he'd found nothing but dark hovels with shuttered windows and coffee tins overturned on their chimney pipes, or boards weighted down with rocks atop the stone chimneys, keeping animals and weather out. He was moving past a mud brick stable when something shifted ahead of him about 50 yards, visible against several lamplit windows he hadn't seen until now. As he stepped out past the stable, the muzzle of a double-bore gut shredder was pressed against the side of his head, so cold it made his teeth ache.
One more move, you son of a bitch, and I'll blow your head off.
Yakima swept his rifle straight up. He saw the streak of flame slanting skyward. The shotgun smacked the stable wall and fell. Moving instinctively, Yakima pivoted, drew his left hand back behind his shoulder, and let it fly. It connected with the face of the gray silhouette before him. The woman flew sideways and hit the ground hard, skidding several feet, snow flying up around her. Her scarf fell away from her face. Her knit cap tumbled off her shoulder. Brown hair cascaded down her shoulders. She tossed it back and drew a hand to the cheek that Yakima had just tattooed. He couldn't see her face clearly in the snowy darkness, but he could see enough of her that, coupled with her voice, he knew she was Ramsey Kane, school teacher and mayor of Dead River. Yakima stared down at her. She stared back at him, holding her hand to her face. He couldn't see her expression, but he sensed her fear.
What are you doing out here with that cannon, Miss Kane?
I was about to ask you the same thing, Mr. Henry.
Well, ain't that a coincidence?
Yakima stooped and pulled the shotgun out of the snow, brushed the snow off its barrel, and inspected it closely.
Looky here. A long-barreled, double-bored shotgun. Just like the one that was used to blow the illustrious deputy town marshal of Dead River off his throne.
What are you talking about, Henry?
If I look in here and find it's loaded with double-aught buck, Miss Kane, I'm gonna be real disappointed in you.
As she lay there, one leg curled beneath her, he clamped his rifle under his arm and tripped the shotgun's breaching lever.
Hold it!
Ramsey Kane jerked her head to the right. Yakima lifted his own head up to see a figure moving toward him, crouched over the rifle he held in both hands before him, the barrel aimed at Yakima. Yakima froze, the shotgun in his hands hanging open, the barrels pointed at the ground.
You just hold it right there, mister.
The man moved up on him. He walked with a limp that Yakima hadn't noticed before. He was clothed in a fur coat and high-topped fur boots, with a shaggy, peaked muskrat cap on his head. He stopped several yards behind the woman.
What's going on here?
Hold on.
Seeing you cross the street, mister. What was that blast about?
It's all right, Saul. I think.
Well, what's that supposed to mean?
Another smaller, bulkier figure moved up behind him, trudging through the snow. This one, a woman, her black wool skirt buffeting about her legs. She was dressed in so much black that Yakima could just barely make out her silhouette, but he could see her gray hair blowing in the wind. She looked like a large old bird grounded by the weather.
I seen you! I seen you in a dream I had, riding a black horse and bringing trouble to Dead River!
Saul kept his eyes and rifle aimed at Yakima.
Mama, go on back to the shop. I got it under control.
Doing evil out here. Up to no good, sneaking about in the storm where you thought humanly eyes couldn't find you. You and Miss Ramsey Kane.
Mama!
Ramsey Kane pushed herself to her knees, her hair blowing wildly.
Saul, put the gun down.
Yakima couldn't tell for sure what direction the sounds had come from, as the wind had swirled and obscured them. They seemed to have originated from the southwest side of town, the direction of the marshal's office. Saul Abernathy and Ramsey Kane both turned their heads in that direction. Yakima dropped the shotgun. Lifting his rifle, he bolted forward. He rammed the stock against the side of Abernathy's head, dropping the man where he stood. His mother lunged for Yakima and fell in the snow. Snow blasting him, Yakima ran across the main street and down the side street where the marshal's office and McMaster's livery stable sat amongst several boarded-up businesses. Ahead were a couple of flickering lights. He could see the gauzy outlines of the buildings to his right and left, and when he was about 50 yards away, he saw the marshal's office. That's where the lights were flickering. On the office porch steps, a figure lay sprawled. The half-breed looked around carefully. He continued toward the figure, dropped to a knee, took his yellow boy in his right hand, and rolled the man over with his left.
The bank money. They got the bank money.
Who?
The light left the man's eyes. Yakima rose and stumbled up the snowy steps to look through the gaping office door. The flickering lantern on the marshal's desk was the only light, so he couldn't see anything clearly. As he walked inside the office, he saw that the door of the cell that had been housing the stolen Douglas bank money was standing wide open. Inside, there was only the vacant cot. The saddlebags were gone.
Damn it.
Yakima wheeled and went back outside. At the bottom of the porch steps, he looked around. The snow was scuffed all around the building, but two distinct sets of tracks that were filling in fast with fresh snow led off across the street, angling gradually toward the town's center. Yakima levered around into the Winchester's chamber, lowered the hammer, and jogged across the street, following the tracks across a vacant lot on the other side. The two men were running hard. Yakima saw a broad, scuffed, and packed mark where one had tripped over a snow-buried rock and fallen. Judging by the freshness of the tracks, he wasn't far behind them. His heart thudded. He raked cold breaths in and out of his lungs. He leaped snowy sage and small cedars and occasional piles of trash. Ahead, the rear of several Pine Street business buildings loomed. Yakima felt a burn across his left cheek. He threw himself forward. Another bullet ripped like a knife across his upper right arm, tearing his coat. Warm blood oozed under his shirt.
Damn it!
He rose to a knee and began firing at a rear corner of a building 30 yards ahead and to his right, from where the gun had flashed. His slugs chewed into the building's rear wall. He ran forward, and in his haste, he tripped over several chunks of scattered firewood. They rolled under the soles of his boots, and he fell face down on the ground, banging his head against the pile of wood that the other split logs had tumbled from. As he rolled onto his back, he saw a dark figure moving toward him from his back trail. The figure was holding a long gun across its slender body. He started to bring up his rifle, and the figure stopped abruptly. Ramsey threw up her hands.
Henry, no!
He lowered the Winchester and twisted around to look at the place from where the shots had come. Then he turned to the woman again.
Get down!
Awkwardly, she dropped to her knees and looked around. Yakima fired several more shots at the rear corner of the building. The slugs blew up snow puffs and hammered the wooden wall with dull thuds. There was no return fire. The snow swirled. He lowered the rifle. The marshal's killers were likely gone. They wouldn't get far. He'd finally found one good thing about this damn snowbound valley. Your enemies would be here until you found them again, or they found you.
Are you hit?
No.
He thumped cartridges from his shell belt through the Winchester's loading gate.
What the hell are you doing out here? Trying to get your full head blown off?
I followed you. I saw the marshal. Your head's bleeding. We'd best be getting you to... Good Lord! You've been shot!
Yeah, it's just a burn. I'm gonna get after those sons of bitches.
Yakima let her help him to his feet, but when he pulled away from her, he found the snowy night pitching around him and a bell tolling in his head. Ramsey Kane crouched and tugged his left arm around her shoulders and wrapped her right arm around his waist.
As I was saying, we'd best get you back to the marshal's office. You're gonna need some tending. Those men will still be in town tomorrow. Where the hell else are they gonna go?
I can make it.
She held on to him and began leading him back the way they'd come.
Be quiet, Mr. Henry.
Why are you doing this, Miss Kane?
Burkholder sort of thought you were cleared of Fabian's murder. You're about the last man in town who's able to protect the rest of us from those savages. I saw what they did to the marshal. If they killed both lawmen, God only knows what they have in mind for the rest of us.
What were you doing skulking around outside with that barn blaster?
She glanced behind her.
Oh, no! I left it back there. Oh, never mind. I'll retrieve it in the morning. It's my only gun except for an old cap-and-ball pistol my father gave to me. Oh, to answer your question, I heard something outside my window. It might have been the wind, but I'm pretty sure I heard something. I even saw a shadow through my curtain. The men in town will tell you I'm hysterical at times, which is bullshit. Anyway, I must have seen those killers walk past my house after they killed Shade Darlin, because a shadow did indeed pass by my window.
They crossed the vacant lot and were heading across the street, arm in arm, staggering drunkenly. They stumbled up to the jailhouse steps together, stopping at Burkholder's partly snow-covered body.
Oh, good Lord. I think I'm going to be sick.
She whipped away from Yakima, who grabbed a roof support post to steady himself. He pulled himself up on the stoop, then got the office door open and stumbled inside. He closed the door to keep as much of the snow and cold as possible outside and walked heavily toward the chair fronting the marshal's desk. He dropped his hat on the floor, bit off his gloves, then leaned back in the chair and probed his aching forehead with two fingers. They came away a little bloody, but not bad. He looked at his upper right arm, saw the blood staining his coat around the ragged 3-inch tear.
That's a good coat you tore, you son of a bitch.
He worked the Mackinaw's bone buttons back through their rawhide loops and shrugged out of the coat, letting it sag against the chair back. He looked at the tear in the bloodstained sleeve. Through it, he saw the pink furrow the bullet had carved across his upper arm. It wasn't much of a burn, just enough to nettle him. The blood in the pink groove was liver-colored, and it oozed a little when he squeezed his biceps. Ramsey Kane walked in on a gust of wind-blown snow. Her eyes and cheeks were wet, her hair flecked with snow. She closed the door, hesitated there, one hand on the knob, the other on the frame. Her shoulders quivered.
Why? He was such a good man. He's been a good marshal here for many years. Why is this all happening?
You tell me, I don't live here.
It's funny, don't you think, that all this started after you came? With that money?
Yakima looked at her.
Everyone in town knows about it. I don't know who told whom. Deputy Darling probably told his pals, and word spread like a wildfire.
You think he and his friends intended to steal it and they got crossways with each other?
The man who'd bushwhacked him on the pass hadn't looked like either of Darling's pals that Yakima had sent to the doctor that morning. But Darling might have had more friends than those two. Who knew how many men might have set their sights on the Douglas bank loot?
Oh, my nerves are shot. Seeing the marshal lying out there like that.
She went to the wood supply box by the potbelly stove, grabbed a chunk of split cordwood, and opened the stove's door. She stirred the glowing embers around inside the stove until she had a few flames leaping, then tossed the chunk on top of them. She added a couple more logs and closed the door and turned to Yakima.
Let's get you onto Burkholder's cot, and I'll tend to those wounds.
Yakima heaved himself to his feet. He wobbled a little, and she helped him over to the cot on the far side of the room from the desk. The marshal had set up a makeshift sitting area here, with a cot boasting several blankets. There was a braided oval rug on the floor, a rocking chair, and two tomato crates spilling old books, brittle newspapers, and yellow-backed dime novels. Beside the crude bookshelves against the outside wall stood a washstand with a tin pitcher and washbowl. Yakima sat down on the edge of the cot.
It'll take a while to heat water, so I'll clean those cuts with whiskey. Dusty usually kept a bottle in his drawer here. Always gave me a shot or two during our so-called council meetings, which usually only involved my giving him a reading lesson.
She grabbed the bottle out of a lower desk drawer, popped the cork, and walked back over to the cot.
He said he wanted to be able to read Mr. Emerson before he kicked off.
Tears glazed her eyes. She swiped them away with the back of her wrist. Yakima stared at her, felt a warmth of appreciation for the woman's beauty. She no longer owned the beauty of youth, but the richer beauty of a mature woman. He could tell that her years had not been easy. He could also tell that the body beneath her coats and skirts would be a full, supple one.
Don't stare at me like that, Mr. Henry, or I'll leave you here to do this yourself.
You ain't married?
No.
She poured whiskey into the wadded-up scrap of cotton in her right hand.
Neither am I wanton.
That's one up on me.
So I heard.
Yakima thought he saw the corners of her mouth give a little upward quirk.
First thing you do when you ride into town is sleep with the town's most alluring young lady of the evening, heedless of Deputy Darling's warning against such a thing.
I'm not good with authority.
Would you like to remove your shirt, or shall I cut off the sleeve?
Hell, there's no need to cut off the sleeve.
Quickly, he pulled his shirt tails out of his buckskin trousers and started unbuttoning it.
That sleeve can be patched.
It's bloodstained.
As much as needs to will come out with a good soak in a pot of snow melt.
She helped him take his shirt off, held it up as though it were a dead snake, then dropped it onto the floor. He unbuttoned his long handle's top, which clung to him like a second skin, and peeled it down his arms until it lay bunched at his waist. She flinched a little at the scars on his hulking torso, hammered and shaped like a silver concho, his red neck rising from his shoulders like a sandstone knob of rock.
Good Lord, Mr. Henry. You've been around. And that's putting it delicately.
Hadn't been an easy life, but it's been a life. More than some of my dead friends can say.
I won't ask what you do for a living.
She dabbed gingerly at the wound on his arm.
I'm not a pistolier, Miss Kane. And I'm not a regulator.
What are you then?
I guess you could say I'm a professional grubline rider. I've done some ranch work, railroad work, stage line work. Just about any work you can name, I've done it.
How'd you throw in with Sheriff Kelly?
I was in his jail.
She lifted her eyes to his.
In bed with the wrong woman? Again?
Yakima grinned. Having her here, this close to him, ignited a warm passion in him. He wrapped a hand around her arm, gently pulled her to him.
Nope. The right one, I reckon.
She pulled away from him.
I told you, Mr. Henry, I may be unmarried, but I am not a brazen hussy.
Gonna be a long, stormy night. I see no reason why we shouldn't make a time of it.
He pulled her toward him again. She didn't resist this time. She let him press his lips to hers, but the moment didn't last long. Two men with drawn weapons stormed into the marshal's office. Ramsey Kane pulled away from Yakima and, straightening, swung around to face the two fur-clad figures standing just inside the office's open door. Yakima's right hand dropped to his pistol butt and held there. Both intruders were holding guns on him. The tall man on the left, a rifle. The shorter man, Eldon Potts, aimed a cocked Remington straight out from his right shoulder. Both were the friends of Deputy Darling who'd attacked Yakima that morning, and they wore the bruises and bandages to prove it. The tall man had a bandage wrapped scarf-like around his head beneath his round fur hat, holding his broken jaw closed. The short Potts had a stout leather brace like a horse collar around his neck. Their breath frosted visibly in the air around their heads.
Get out of here, both of you sons of bitches!
The tall man bounded forward, raising his rifle and narrowing one fierce eye, his hawk nose flaring.
Look what we done found, Eldon. A pretty little man making time with the half-breed.
Spittle bubbled through his long yellow teeth and out the corners of his mouth as he spoke, or tried to speak, rather, with the bandage holding his jaws taut.
All the time with the marshal lying dead out on the porch steps.
I told you to get out of here, Boz. None of what's happening here is any of your business. Stay out of it.
Potts stepped forward now, too, waving his cocked pistol around.
Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? How long you two been in cahoots, anyways?
What the hell are you talking about?
Don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Potts looked at the cells at the back of the dimly lit room.
Where's that Douglas Bank loot?
What'd you do with it? We know now you two done killed the marshal and took it. Planning on holing up here for the night, rutting like a couple of minks, then lighting out somewheres as soon as the weather clears.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Shut up, Miss Mayor.
Potts walked up to Ramsey and aimed the gun at her face from 2 feet away.
We know where you come from, what kind of woman you are. Goddamn yellow-livered Reb from Arkansas. You and your pa and your brother Elm. Southern outlaws, all of you. Now that your pa and your brother's gone, you just been waiting to find a way out of here. Way out of here loaded to your pretty little gills with a tidy little sum of stolen gold.
Boz came forward again, spittle dribbling down his chin.
We ain't gonna let that happen. That money's ours. We ain't saying it's right, no sir. We ain't fool enough to think stealing's right.
We're done tired of old Dead River, and we aim to get out of here same as you. Only it's gonna be us toting that gold, not you. You, Miss Kane. You and the half-breed's gonna be feeding the hungry wolves that prowl around here of a winter. Ain't that right, Bob?
Thanks for killing Shade for us, Breed. That saved us having to split the gold three ways.
Potts lowered his pistol to Ramsey's belly.
Where is it? Where is it, Miss Mayor? Maybe if you tell us quick, we'll share a little of it with you.
If you're real good to us.
He lurched forward, intending to nuzzle Ramsey's neck. Ramsey reached up and raked her right hand down his round, weathered face, carving three bloody lines, starting at his right eye. The bullet smashed into the wall behind and between Ramsey and Yakima. As Potts slapped his left hand to his bloody eye, Yakima bounded up from the cot and grabbed Boz's rifle with his left hand. He shoved the rifle straight up. Yakima lurched forward, ramming his sore head into Boz's forehead. Boz stumbled backward toward the open middle cell. Yakima moved with him, wrenching the rifle free of the man's right hand with his own left. Boz reached for the .45 holstered on his duck-clad right thigh. Yakima swung the man's own rifle butt against the side of Boz's head. Boz dropped like a 50-pound sack of corn. Yakima whipped around, racking a fresh cartridge into the Winchester's chamber. Potts stumbled against the office's front wall, clutching his bloody eye with one hand while sliding his pistol around as though trying to draw a bead on Ramsey, who was flopping around on the cot, covering her head with her arms. Yakima fired Boz's carbine. Potts slammed back against the room's front wall. He dropped his pistol and fell to his knees, hitting the floor in a growing pool of his own blood. Ramsey lowered her arms and lifted her head. She looked at the lifeless form of Potts, then shuttled her shocked gray-green eyes to Boz, who lay on the floor in front of the middle cell, blood oozing from the back of his cracked skull. Yakima could tell by his still form that Boz was as dead as his partner.
Oh, sweet Jesus!
Ramsey's face was as white as the snow on the floor in front of the still-open door. She looked at Yakima, her eyes widening.
What kind of a man are you?
One who just saved your hide.
He leaned the carbine against the cell and walked over to the front door. He meant to close it, but then saw Burkholder outside on the steps, the man's boots nearest the building. The marshal was nearly covered in snow. Only the toes of his boots and the tip of his nose poked above the swirling white powder. Yakima went down two steps, picked up the lawman's ankles, and wincing against the burn in his arm and the sundry aches in his skull, he dragged the man into the office. He laid him out against the front wall, kicked the door closed, and walked over to the cot where Ramsey now sat, leaning her back against the wall. She had both her knees drawn up to her chin, the soles of her fur-lined leather boots wedged against the cot's edge. She was just sitting there, breathing heavily, as though she'd run a great distance, staring at Yakima with a faintly befuddled expression.
They were planning on taking the money. They and Shade Darling.
Reckon this town was starting to nettle them some. I know how they feel.
Yakima reached down for the whiskey bottle that was still standing on the floor where Ramsey had left it. He handed it to her.
Have a drink on Burkholder.
She grabbed the bottle, closed her lips over its mouth, and tipped both her head and the bottle back. She took two swallows. If the Hoohead John had burned going down, she didn't show it. She extended the bottle to Yakima. He took it, tipped a long pull, and squatted on the floor in front of her.
I was ambushed up the Eastern Pass earlier.
You're getting right popular.
Two men. One had a nose like Boz's over there and a brown plaid Mackinaw and a bullet-crowned hat. I didn't get a look at the other one.
Ramsey was still staring at him as though trying to see through dirty glass.
I don't know who you're talking about.
I'm thinking whoever they are, they took the money. Don't ask me why, but why not? Anyone else still around capable of all this? And stealing stolen bank gold?
Well, I wouldn't have said Shade Darling was capable of such a misdeed. I guess I was wrong. You think that's why they killed him?
I don't know. Somehow all this has to be related.
And the girl?
Maybe she and Shade were planning on running away together after they'd taken the money. Kelly and me hadn't been in town long enough for anyone to cook up some elaborate plan to steal the loot that was locked up in the jail. They couldn't have known about it for more than an hour or two at the most.
Ramsey dropped her feet to the floor beside the cot and stood up.
I have to get out of here. I can't take being around these dead men. I don't know how you live like you do.
Hold on. I'll walk you home.
I'm not a schoolgirl who needs to be protected by the likes of you, Yakima Henry.
She was a little wobbly on her feet as she made for the door. Yakima stood near the cot, staring at her. She looked at Marshal Burkholder, then closed her hand over the doorknob. She stared at the door for a time, and then she swung her head to Yakima and hiked a shoulder.
Well, I reckon it couldn't hurt.
He dressed quickly, pulled his coat on, donned his hat, grabbed his rifle, and led Ramsey outside. Yakima looked around carefully to make sure he wasn't about to get them both dry-gulched. He might even find the attackers tonight. After he dropped Ramsey off at her house, he intended to head back to the Cannon house, see if the men had returned to their room. Getting the loot back and finding the killers might be doable by midnight. As he moved along the side street toward Pine Street, unseen in the snowy darkness, he glanced over his left shoulder. Ramsey was following him from only a few feet away, a tenseness in her body, her head turning slowly from left to right warily.
Maybe Annabelle was right.
Yakima thought he heard her say something. He slowed to let her catch up to him.
What's that?
It's too early in the year for a storm like this.
What's that mean?
Maybe old Ma Abernathy was right about you. Maybe you brought trouble with you. You and the black horse she saw in her dream.
Yakima looked at her. Her hair blew wildly in the wind. She turned to him, pinned him with her dark gaze. Cradling his rifle in his arms, he continued toward Pine Street.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was waiting for me here. Now, where you live?
She looked around warily, her hair sliding across her face. Then stepped out in front of him and angled toward the dark Cannon house sitting kitty-corner from the wild coyote. Following her, Yakima kept his eyes on the hotel, wondering if the two men he was looking for were up there in their room.
Damn curious. Maybe old Ma Abernathy's right. Maybe me and Wolf started all this trouble. Wouldn't be the first time.
Ahead of him, Ramsey walked up the snowy porch steps of a neat, brick, square-shaped house with a narrow, unpainted porch. A light shone in a window behind a flour sack curtain. Beyond the house, sitting at an angle to it, was the school. It was shaped like a church, but boasted a bell tower instead of a steeple. It was a small building sheathed in snow-mantled pinyons, a large wind-bent tamarack, two small outhouses, and a sprawling woodpile flanking it. Ramsey fished a key out of her pocket, opened her door, and went in, stepping aside and holding the door, looking at Yakima with an eyebrow arched. After her demeanor earlier, he was a little surprised she'd let him in. He shook his head.
I'm taking a walk.
No, it's cold out there.
There's a place I want to check before the killer's trail goes completely cold. I'll be back to check on you before I head back to the jail.
She nodded, furrowing her brows, and closed the door. Yakima moved off the porch, following his and Ramsey's tracks that were quickly filling with fresh snow. After a time, he diverged from the tracks and soon found himself at the door of the Cannon house. Slowly, he turned the knob of the front door. He heard the faint tinkle of the bell overhead. He continued to inch the door forward and stepped inside. Then he closed the door just as slowly. He turned around, saw that there was a single candle in a stone jug atop the old man's small desk. The old man himself was sitting in the chair as before, to the left of the foyer. A cat was curled on Percy Crandall's lap, atop a knit afghan that reached from the old man's ankles to his neck. The old man's head was turned toward Yakima. The cat was just a curled silhouette on his lap with two pulsing yellow eyes that followed Yakima as he made his way, walking on the balls of his feet, along the foyer and past the desk. He mounted the stairs, wincing as every other step gave a groan. When he finally found himself in front of room two, he doffed his hat and tipped an ear to the door. He heard no movement from within. No light shone beneath the door. There was no light at all except the ambient snow light from a window at the end of the hall. Holding the yellow boy in his right hand, the barrel inches from the scratched door panel, he closed his left hand around the knob and turned it. Yakima stepped behind the door casing and gave the door a hard nudge. The rectangular opening was as black as velvet. No guns flashed and popped at him from inside. The air in the room was as cold as that in the hall. Yakima lit a match and held it high as he stepped into the open doorway. He couldn't see much by the light of the match, so he went over to the wobbly dresser with a cracked mirror and lit the candle lamp on top of it. He held the lamp high and looked around. The room looked as it had before. Only the saddlebags and sundry other possibles were gone. The room had been vacated. Yakima blew out the lamp. Quickly, no longer caring how much noise he made, he clomped down the hall and down the stairs. The cat leaped out of Crandall's lap, and Crandall woke, swinging his head around.
Oh! What
in tarnation, who's there?
Standing by the desk, Yakima held up the jug with the candle in it.
Me.
Oh, who's me?
Where'd your boarders go?
Who?
The men you had upstairs. They cleared out. Where'd they go?
I don't know. They just came by an hour ago and cleared out. Didn't say where they was going, and I ain't in the habit of asking folks their business.
What did they look like?
You asking a hell of a lot of questions for a damn Indian!
What did they look like?
Well, one was tall. Sort of tall like you and dark skinned too.
He have a nose even bigger than mine? And a brown plaid coat?
Yeah, he did. And the other was just as tall, but rangy. Had glasses, spade beard.
What were their names?
Oh, hell, I don't even recollect what I had for supper.
They sign a register?
Help, I don't keep a register. What's the damn point of a register? As long as they pay me, that's all I ask.
Yakima turned and went out, letting the bell clang raucously above the door. He shivered as the sharp teeth of the wind sawed into him and battered his face with snow blowing down over the roof's edge. He stumbled down the Cannon House's porch steps. He retraced his steps to Ramsey Kane's house, feebly lit against the storm.
Everything all right?
She was dressed in a plain but neat and clean gold-brown day dress with fur slippers on her feet. Her hair was down, and a recent brushing made it shine in the lamplight. Nodding, she pulled the door open. He doffed his hat and walked in, drawn by the warmth of a fire and the smell of roasting meat.
Are you hungry?
Yakima nodded. She took his rifle and leaned it against the wall by the door, then helped him out of his coat. She hung the coat on a peg in the wall, then led him into a small kitchen where a square oilcloth-covered table sat against a curtained window. There were two place settings on the table. Cracked stone mugs, chipped china plates, and tarnished silverware. Yakima sagged into a chair. She filled his mug with coffee from a small black pot. There was a bottle on the table, and she splashed a good amount of hooch into the mug, then went to the range from which she lifted an iron skillet. She forked a thick steak onto his plate, then one onto her own plate. And from another skillet, she shoveled out fried potatoes and green beans from an airtight tin. Neither spoke as they ate hungrily. Yakima finished before she did and sat back in his chair, sated at last. His fatigue pressed down on him, but it was a good feeling now. He would sleep well, letting go of all his cares for a short time before morning.
There are more potatoes.
He shook his head.
No, thanks anyway.
He'd never tasted coffee so good. The whiskey in it eased the dull throb in the back of his head and in his temple and bullet-furrowed arm. When she finished her own meal, she cleared the table and then refilled their coffee cups, splashing more whiskey into each. She sagged down across from him, leaning back in her chair, and lifted the steaming mug to her lips.
You're from the South.
She frowned over the rim of her mug.
Does that matter to you?
No.
Her cheeks colored slightly, and she lowered her eyes to her coffee, blowing on the surface, then taking another sip.
My family fought in the war, my father and my brothers. They rode with Quantrill and robbed several banks in Missouri and Arkansas after the war. The North hunted them like dogs. That's why we came here. I'd promised myself to a boy who died in that war. I came here full of hate for the North. We found that half of the little settlement of Dead River, it wasn't much more than a gold camp then, was populated by several families from the North. Feuds boiled, of course. A few people died because of the old hatreds. Gradually, as the population dwindled, the feuding died. Now it just festers now and then, like it did earlier.
Yakima looked at the nearly empty bottle on the table between them.
That what makes you nervous?
I'd reckon you'd leap at shadows if you'd ever been raped, Mr. Henry.
Yakima looked at her. She kept her eyes on her coffee mug.
2 years ago, a man broke in here. I'd just come in with an armload of wood, but hadn't closed the door tight. When I turned after dropping the wood in the box, a man was standing in front of me, wearing a flour sack mask.
She lifted her eyes to Yakima's.
Did you notice Saul Abernathy's limp? I grabbed my daddy's old cap and ball and shot the rapist in the calf as he was leaving. Still don't know if it was Saul, but he disappeared right after the incident. When I saw him again, he was favoring that right leg.
What did the marshal do?
I never told him. A big part of me has always hoped he'd try it again. Saul, that old greener lays down the law way better than any law dog ever done.
Ramsey smiled, her gray-green eyes flashing a little from the hooch and likely giddiness from the cold of the topsy-turvy day. She leaned forward, pressing her mouth against the top of her wrist.
Forgive my Ozark grammar and my ideas about justice. Both come back when I drink.
We'd best get that popper back.
Tomorrow. Now, it's time for bed.
Oh, I'll be going then.
Yakima drank down the last of his coffee.
No point.
She looked into his eyes across the table.
I got me a big, lonely bed, Mr. Henry.
She gave him a lingering, beckoning stare, then walked out of the kitchen. Yakima woke the next morning feeling as satisfied by the woman's body as he had been sated by her cooking the night before. Once he got to sleep, he'd slept hard enough to temper the pain in his head, and the furrow across his arm burned only slightly. He sat up, dropped his bare feet to the floor, rested his elbows on his knees, and lowered his head to his hands, digging his fingers into his scalp. Ramsey's groan was like one of the love cries she'd given the night before. They'd buried themselves beneath the sheets and heavy comforter made from deer skins and fleece, burrowed down in the corn-shucked mattress, and entangled themselves in each other's bodies, warmly oblivious of the cold night outside. Yakima turned to her, a long, slender shadow against the pale light of the window on the bed's far side. She was turned away from him, her face hidden, her hair spread invitingly across the pillow. Yakima stood, stretched, and then walked naked out into the cabin's tiny parlor to light a fire in the hearth. Once that was done, he hurried back into the bedroom and rolled into bed beneath the thick, soft comforter, turned to Ramsey and spooned his body against hers. Wrapping his arms around her, he cupped her heavy breasts in his hands and kissed her neck. His attentions had the desired effect. She reached behind the swell of her rump, found him to be as ready as she was, and pulled him to her. They moved and rocked together as they had the night before. She pressed her cheek to the pillow as he thrust against her. She gripped a blanket tight with one fist and reached back with the other to pull him closer. He bucked against her hard, and they finished together, spending themselves completely. They stayed spooned together as their breathing returned to normal. Ramsey hooked her arm over her shoulder and splayed her hand across the back of his head. As he kissed her ear, she rolled over to face him.
Still think I'm an evil spirit?
Mister, I don't care what you are.
They lay in each other's arms for a while, pressed together, letting their blood settle. He nuzzled her neck. She lay warm and pliant in front of him, breathing regularly, drifting back towards sleep. Reluctantly, he pulled away from her and crawled out of bed. Outside, he couldn't hear wind or snow.
I'll make some breakfast.
No need. I'll be gone.
What's the hurry?
Well, if the snow's let up, those killers might get ideas of trying to drift out of the valley.
The passes won't be open for days, and that's only if it warms up and the sun shines. But have it your way. I'm going with you.
No, you're not.
She swept the covers off her and stood, a woman-curved, long-haired shadow in the room's dim light. She strode to the wash basin.
I'm the mayor, and if you know anything at all about the hierarchy of a town's government, I'm the chief law enforcement officer. Not to mention, the only one left.
The wind nearly died, and the snow had dwindled to a few thin strands, stitching the blue air. The area around the cabin was blanketed white, a mist of wind-tussled snow swishing over the sugary surface. Yakima moved down the three steps into the yard, looking around, thinking.
Where to?
How many houses still occupied here in town, you think?
Well, let's see. Ms. Venora and Tully live over in the Wild Coyote. Old Lucky Ryan has a cabin behind his harness shop, but you find him mostly in the Wild Coyote with everyone else, Except the preacher and the Abernathys, of course. They live in a lean-to addition behind their furniture shop. McMasters lives in his barn. Percy Crandall mostly sleeps in his lobby chair in the Cannon House. When I was over at the Coyote, I saw a couple of drifters who were too deep in poker to leave before the storm struck. They're likely holed up over there. Of course, there's the Wolfer, Thunder Dodd. He has a cabin up on the Western Pass, but he'll be spending the winter in the Cannon House most likely, as Miss Venora won't allow him upstairs with the girls. Foul man. Well, those are the only folks left in town. With the girls at the Coyote, that would make 20, I guess.
She looked at Yakima with a vague question in her eyes.
Nice to know who's accounted for and who's not.
I heard Altabanos is back. Without Christian.
You know her?
She was one of the Reverend's pupils, until she eloped with one of the older boys at the school and they left to start their own spread.
Well, they started it. Let's walk to town. Keep an eye out for tracks in the snow and smoke lifting from chimneys. I'm thinking our killers must have holed up in an otherwise vacant shack.
I could take one side of town, but I'd just as soon we didn't split up. I'm the chief law enforcement officer. I leave the dirty work to the men who work for me.
Do I work for you?
It seems you volunteered for the job.